Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. I've recently just confirmed bookings for both Scale 5, where LQ is a sponsor, and the Linux World Open Solutions Summit, where I'll be participating in the Ask the Experts segment. Now, both events are in the second week of February. They're only a couple days apart, but almost 2,800 miles apart, so it should be an interesting week, although I did end up managing to get one day to sleep in my home city in between the two events. I did attend Scale 4 last year, and it's an absolutely great event. I've never been to an Open Solutions Summit. It's kind of a new thing that IDG is doing, so I'm really looking forward to both events, and if you'll be in either one, of course Scale is on the West Coast, and the Open Solutions Summit is in New York City. So if you'll be in either city while those two are going on, I'd definitely try to attend, and if you'd like to meet up at either one, make sure to drop me a line. The next LQ update. Don't forget to vote in the 2006 LinuxQuestions.org Members' Choice Awards. So far, the feedback on the polls has been great. There's 21 different categories this year. A lot of great participants in every category. So like I said, if you haven't voted yet, make sure to do so. www.linuxquestions.org/awards. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is, where does open source code come from? And this is from a Business Review Online article that points out that the European Commission has published its final report on the economic impact of FLOSS, which is free and Libre open source software, on innovation and competitiveness of the EU ICT sector. One interesting nugget in the report, and I've not had a chance to fully read this yet, it's 287 pages long, was a top 10 business contributors list, and this was based on the number of quote-unquote person months that was donated by each company. To be honest, I was a little bit surprised by some of the list. Now, Sun was number one, which was no surprise, and rounding out the top three were IBM and Red Hat, also very much to be expected in my opinion. Now the rest of the list, going down the line from 4 to 10 in order, is Silicon Graphics, SAP, MySQL AB, Netscape, Zimian, Real Networks, and AT&T. And that's where some of the surprises came in. Many companies I'd have expected to be on there are quite suspiciously, I think, absent. I was kind of surprised that SAP was up that high at number 5 ahead of companies like MySQL. I know they donated MaxDB to MySQL, so I'm assuming that code went under them and not MySQL, who's actually kind of the one that released it to the open source community. But I don't know what else they have released, or if just that one product has that many person months in it. And AT&T, going back very far, of course, some of the Unix code originally came from there. I don't know how long this report is going back, but definitely some surprises there, I think. And it just goes to show that code isn't always coming from the places that you think it is. The next story I have is also related to the report, and it's the economic impact of open source on Europe. And this is from a blog post from Matt Acey, and he has some of the summary information of the report. And like I said, it's 287 pages. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I do plan to. It looks very interesting. And here's some of the summary observations that Matt made. Quote, Rashib Ghosh and UNU Merit put together this insightful report of the impact of FLOSS on the European economy. It was financed by the European Commission's Directorate General for Enterprise and Industry. Why does it matter? The paper starts by suggesting that the information economy accounts for roughly 10% of the GDP of most developed nations, and more than 50% of their economic growth. Think about that. If even remotely true, it means that the kind of IT we espouse matters a great deal. It's fundamental to our future economic growth. Do we want closed or open economies? I think the answer to that is obvious. End quote. There are a couple of observations made in the post that I agree with. And while the study points out, for instance, that FLOSS adoption is higher in the EU than it is in the United States, commercial adoption is almost certainly higher in the United States, which I think is important to point out that distinction. Matt's post covers some additional top-level highlights, such as percentage of code contributed by individuals versus firms versus institutions, the direct impact of open source on the European economy, innovation is a big part of it, percentage of software developers in the U.S. who are employed by proprietary packaged software firms, and it's way lower than you might have guessed, and quite a bit more. And his conclusion, basically, is that, quote, so what does this mean for Europe? The report challenges us with the following scenarios. Europe faces these three options. Closed, where existing business models are entrenched through legal and technical regulation, favoring a passive consumer model over new business supporting active participation in an information society of prosumers. Generic, where current mixed policies lead to gradual growth of FLOSS, while many of the opportunities it presents are missed. Voluntary, where policies and the market develop to recognize and utilize the potential of FLOSS and similar collaborative models of creativity to harness the full potential of active citizens in the information society. End quote. And like I said, I'm definitely looking forward to reading the entire report, even now that I've seen the summary. It's just something that I'm going to have to make some time for at this point, which has been at a little bit of a premium recently. But as I do read that, I will make sure to keep you updated on it. The next story I have is Fluendo makes proprietary codecs available to Linux users. And I'll just start out with a quote from the original release. Quote, in response to the growing demand for proprietary multimedia codecs on the open source Linux platform, multimedia software development company Fluendo has released GStreamer codec plugins that provide native support for a variety of proprietary media formats. Available from Fluendo's webshop, several of the plugins facilitate encoding as well as playback. In order to provide these codecs without risking legal conflict, Fluendo has properly licensed the relevant patents on the various platforms from their respective holders. Currently, many Linux video applications facilitate Windows Media video playback using Windows DLL files and Wine, which provides suboptimal performance, particularly with streaming video. Additionally, proprietary codec support in many current open-source media players potentially constitutes patent infringement. Fluendo's codecs could potentially provide better integration for streaming Windows Media Playback in Linux web browsers, as well as through GStreamer-based desktop applications like Totem. GStreamer, developed in part by Fluendo, is an increasingly popular open-source multimedia editing and playback framework designed primarily for use on open-source operating systems. We have had these codecs in development for quite some time to ensure they are of the highest quality possible and that all legal aspects are properly covered, says Fluendo co-founder Pascal Bagas. By offering this drop-in solution, we hope to increase the competitiveness of GNU, Linux, and Solaris platforms. End quote. And then one of the developers, Christian, also commented on his blog and was posting in related stories, and he added the following. Quote, I see a lot of people confused about why we are releasing these codecs when there are things like open source FFmpeg codecs, etc. Our goal is not to provide the community with codecs, which there are absolutely no support for already, as that would be foolish. Our goal is to provide a 100% legal option, which I know a lot of companies who have or want to deploy Linux desktops have been looking for. These companies like open source, but they also have policies in place which hinder them from deploying solutions which have clear patent issues hanging over them in their country of operation. This is unfortunately the case with most multimedia codecs, and even though we have spent a ton of resources on codecs here at Fluendo and are now working with BBC on Dirac, there is still some way to go before the need for non-free codecs are gone. So, for those in a situation where they can freely use FFmpeg and similar options, more power to you. For those who the lack of licensed codecs has been a hindrance or problem for adopting Linux or Solaris desktops at your company or institution, or even for private use, then we hope our plugins will be a good solution. End quote. So, a few comments. Of course, I definitely agree that the current state of Linux multimedia in the codec situation is just not an acceptable one for the long term. And if you're a regular podcast listener, I've commented on this quite a bit in previous podcasts. And while part of the argument comes down to the what do we want to give up meme that I just consistently repeat recently, I'll approach this particular item from a little bit of a different angle, at least for now. Let me start out by saying that I wish Fluendo just a ton of luck on this endeavor and definitely appreciate all the work they've done on GStreamer, which has come a long way. However, I'd be a bit surprised if this is a significant success unless they get some OEM distribution uptake. Now, obviously, that can't currently come in the gratis community releases because they're paying for these, but that's fine. People are willing to pay for a working OS, and that should become clear to everyone with the current situation. Now, Linspire has already gone this route and supports almost everything from MP3s and WMVs legally right out of the box. And while I've seen some good reviews on Linspire, I've not tried the product myself at all, and I haven't heard how successful commercially the most recent release has been. But that brings in the question, with an integrated solution already available, I'm not sure people are willing to spend the roughly $30 for a completely separate, non-integrated product. And I think the Linspire product is about $50 or possibly $60, so roughly double. See, the average user wants things to just work, and just work out of the box. So that brings us to the question of, will distribution vendors come aboard and prepackage these things in an integrated manner? And that's what remains to be seen. Like it or not, at the mainstream level at least, we need to somehow deal with non-free codecs. While I'm 100% fine going the, you know, mplayer slash ugly slash ffmpeg route personally, that's not an option for companies, and that's not an option for the average user. I see this move by Fluendo as sort of a toe dip, if you will. If it gains enough traction with users and enough acceptance from the open source community in general, it will be a bit of an evolutionary step in the process. And to be sure, this is a complicated issue, and I have actually left out some of my opinion and ideas on this for now, but I want to know, what do you think? The next story I have is Flash 9 Final for Linux and an odd EULA. And this is just a quick follow-up to some previous discussions I've had on the podcast. I've kind of been following the Flash 9 development, and it looks like Flash 9 Final for Linux has now officially been released. And kudos to the Adobe team. I know they've been working quite a bit on this, and they've had a pretty high level of transparency for a proprietary product if you follow the penguin.swf blog. And I know some people, especially in the open source community, don't like Flash, and they say it's closed. I think many people's dislike for Flash really is more indicative of the abuses in implementation, for example, those horrific seizure-inducing ads, than really anything on a technical level. But the reality is that these days, many sites just don't function properly, or you lose a lot of functionality without Flash. Now, since there's already enough discussion going on about Flash and not being open source, I won't add to that for now. I do have a comment about the release, though, aside from saying that I did download it and it did work fine for me in Firefox. Has anyone actually read the EULA on Flash? If you have, did you notice this? And the following subsection struck me as extremely odd. And this is directly quoted from the EULA in its section 3.1. Quote, web player prohibited devices. You may not use any web player on any non-PC device or with any embedded or device version of any operating system. For the avoidance of doubt, and by example only, you may not use a web player on any A, mobile device, set-top box, handhelds, phones, webpads, tablets, tablet PCs that are not running Windows XP, tablet PC edition, game consoles, TVs, DVD players, media centers, excluding Windows XP Media Center Edition and its successors, electronic billboards and other digital signage, internet appliances and other internet-connected devices, PDAs, medical devices, ATMs, telematic devices, gaming machines, home automation systems, kiosks, remote control devices, or any other consumer electronic device. B, operator-based mobile, cable, satellite, or television systems. Or C, other closed system devices. End quote. And you can get the full version of that right on the Flash 9 download page. So does it seem strange to anyone else that a format that relies 100% on being ubiquitous has such an arcane arbitrary limitations on it? And what I mean by that is the main strength in Flash is that everyone uses it and nearly everyone has it, especially in the Windows world. If that weren't the case, I don't think anyone would really use it. People use it because it's of its ubiquity. So why could there be any possible benefit of these restrictions to Adobe? You know, if they don't get Flash going on mobile, never mind specifically disallowing it, they're in big trouble long term for the Flash platform. And where the and tablet PCs that are not running Windows XP Tablet PC Edition came from is absolutely beyond me. Basically, they're saying if you purchased, you know, a Lenovo tablet and put Linux on it, you're not legally allowed to run Flash, which seems completely asinine to me. So maybe I'm just not reading it right. It seems pretty cut and dry, but it just seems like an absolutely silly policy to have on Adobe's part. The last story I have is Alan Cox files DRM-related patent. I've seen quite a bit of buzz about the patent application recently filed by Alan Cox, and here's a summary of that patent from the patent site. Quote, "The present invention provides a technique for preventing the unauthorized use of a computer application, operating system, or other program without causing the loss of any information or data. Specifically, the technique of the present invention monitors a computer program for use that is not in compliance with acceptable terms. These terms may be defined, for example, through the use of a license agreement between the computer program provider and the user. When unauthorized use of the computer program is detected, any information and data is saved and the computer program and/or portion of the computer system is disabled. The specifics concerning data that is saved may be determined, for example, by the computer program vendor or the user upon installation of the computer program. Similarly, a conventional suspended disk operation may be utilized. The suspension of the computer program and/or a portion of the system may be maintained for as long as the violation exists, thereby permitting the user to, for example, renew any expired license terms. Once compliance has been reestablished, suspension of the computer program and/or a portion of the system is terminated and activities resume. In situations where compliance is not reestablished, the data may be transferred to the user." End quote. And my interpretation of this is that it's a way for DRM-enabled applications to save data in the case of non-compliance or to suspend the program until compliance is reached. Now, some seem to be indicating that this may be a way for Red Hat to go after Microsoft after Vista is mainstream, and that Vista probably uses DRM somewhat like this. I honestly can't conceivably see that to be the case. An issue such as prior art and those kinds of things aside, I'm definitely no patent lawyer or lawyer of any kind, so I won't comment on those, but it seems unlikely to me for at least two reasons. First, and probably most importantly, it's just way outside of the current operating parameters of Red Hat. They're not the kind of company that I can see going on a patent offensive. It's just not how they operate. It's not their MO. They get that software patents are inherently broken, so I just can't see them using them in that way. Next, I can't imagine at this point in their lifetime, which is a young company, relatively small, but growing rapidly and growing rapidly with a sustainable business model, would they want to get into a legal battle with a company like Microsoft, who has piles of cash and a legion of battle-tested lawyers. So, why the patent application then? I'd say it's part of a plan that they've been building on for about 2 years now, and that's the systematic buildup of strategic defensive patents with the goal of massing enough defenses to avoid being the target of a patent-related suit. And with Ballmer making thinly veiled threats, such as the balance sheet liability comment recently, you know, what choices do they really have? While they know the system is broken, that doesn't mean that they don't have to play the game. That is all I have for now, but thanks for listening.